We will now let Carolyn lead the charge.
We're going into
Carolyn Wharton's book, which is called Digital Prohibition.
Okay, so who knows where we left off last time, but I don't think we went over this specifically. It's a chapter called Aberrant Decoding and Atactical Aesthetics. And, oh yeah, we did. We started with the seven types of digital remixing, but I think we got into the seven types, but a question I had wanted to ask is the digital remixing the dominant mode of production in the 21st century? So that was the question I wanted to ask you, Bob, when she says, as digital mixing becomes the dominant mode of production in the 21st century, the remixed work itself can be created using dramatically different techniques. So she's assuming that that's true, that it's dominant mode of production, but is it really? I mean, how many people are out there doing digital remixing?
I don't know. What page are you on? Let me look at this.
Page 139, and it's the beginning of a chapter. It's that list of sampling, mashups, remakes, surveillance, archiving, and hacks.
Right, so that was the first sentence.
Paragraph, yeah, first
yeah.
sentence.
As digital remixing becomes a dominant mode of production in the 21st century, the remix work itself can be created using dramatically different techniques. And then there are seven different distinct kinds of remixes of what I call atactical aesthetic approaches.
Mm.
These are sampling, mashups, remakes, adaptations and or intertext, capture, stream content and or visualization, surveillance art, which was discussed in the last section, archiving as an aesthetic form, and hacks. Well, she pretty well covers a lot of the digital world. So,
but is it the dominant mode of production?
Well, Arthur Croker, way back in the 90s, talked about the recombinant commodity. And he said, he said sampling and the recombinant commodity are all that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
So within the Android meme, since no humans are able to be creative, all the human can do is assist the replays of the Android meme talking and celebrating itself to other parts of the Android meme. So in a broad sense, humans can only do remix. But I don't know if someone who's Mr. Zuckerberg, would he say Facebook's a remix culture? I don't know. In general, remixing is all that can be done, because Carolyn Wharton is saying that original creativity in the sense of coming up with imagery that no one else has seen before is pretty impossible today. There's so much imagery being made and so much competing with anything you come up with, then people just argue with the imagery around them, basically dancing on the toes of the imagery, so they have to make references to it.
Yeah, and also just the basic fact that everything that we as humans sample in our environment is a remix. She probably gets into that, but do you think she's quoting Croker when she says this about remixing is a dominant mode of production? Is she just taking that from Croker?
She knows Croker's work. I think I talked to her about Croker once, but I don't know if she read those books. I wondered about that when I read the book. Is she aware of Croker having done this? And there's no indication of that. So maybe she missed that part of Croker.
Right.
I was thinking that we are the original. Nobody has come up with original ideas like Ion has over the last 50 years. Now, words are not images. People might get images from what Ion says, but, you know, basically the word world is the left hemisphere, and the image world is the right hemisphere of the brain. And I acknowledge also people who say that's a bullshit categorization. A lot of people think the right-left hemisphere dialectic has been made defunct, doesn't apply anymore, it's bull, but there are many people who know what we mean, so we use it anyways with that proviso. So the imagery is dominant in people. So part of the remix culture is that people only know imagery. That's the way they think today in imagery, the younger kids. So Ion comes up with many verbal statements, many redefining of what went on in history or in different environments, also creates a new effect just by itself. So We are not a remix culture. We are an anti-environment to that.
Dobbstown.
Iandum. Iandum is not a remix culture. Includes the remix, the replaying, the rewriting of history that we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That could be seen as remixing. Remix culture has not come up with the food like we have.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you consider now, Croker considers cuisine as virtual cuisine today. Medicine is, so things you eat are part of virtual reality, Croker would say. But Guertin's not saying that. She's focusing on imagery
right,
in the new media.
Right. So why do these professors, either literature, media, film, why do they ignore the chemical body so vehemently?
Because they're nerds. And they're not jocks. They have no body awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not true among the younger kids today. Like you take Ginny's kids or Greg's kids. I've noticed they're quite comprehensive. They're athletes. They're artists. They have all kinds
mm-hmm.
of talents.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the middle of the 20th century, the people who went to the art world generally were nerdy people. The creative arts, and they didn't seem to have any body awareness like the jock culture would have in some form. It may have been based on Charles Atlas or these other weightlifting gurus, but the body awareness that I noticed throughout the 20th century was not very dominant in the right hemisphere kind of talents.
Hmm. Well, there's a couple things to be said there. First of all, yeah, the young people may have an awareness of their bodies. And actually, I'm just writing a blog now about an interview I had with a young woman. She's a vegan, a yoga instructor, a health coach. She had a major illness, and she recovered, and now she's promoting it's too late. The food supply is so messed up that you can't possibly get what you need from food. So they've missed the boat. And then when you think of jock culture, I mean, look where jock culture has gotten itself, and alcohol and drug excess, you know, they're the big push to get in the NBA or the NFL is to be able to cover up all your excesses. So the extremes are playing out all around us.
Yeah, you have the five-body confusion.
Mm-hmm.
In your practice in Toronto, you had people in showbiz that were your patients in Toronto. It was a media capital for Canadian society. So think back about their lack of awareness of their bodies
mm-hmm.
in your own patient clientele.
Yeah, they'd do anything, take anything, get up early, go to bed late, take something to get them up or put them to bed just to meet their media requirements.
Right. And you think of the ones that were into health, they were boring, dull people, wouldn't be able to act themselves out of a drug bust, right?
Yeah, I mean, we are generalizing, but yeah, the what I call the people now who are into health, they're professional patients.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been able to access their health, and nobody's healthy except us, except people on the complement formulas.
Right, right.
I mean, here I've done, you know, almost 20 summits, and every person that interviews me says, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that. Oh, my gosh, here are my list of symptoms. You know, I think I better get on magnesium. So, you know, it's obvious to me that all these people who've had health problems themselves, they found some way of maneuvering so that they can get somewhat better, but they keep on searching for more answers. That's why they have summits. They interview these 20 odd different people so they can get some more answers for themselves.
Yeah, and then you always surprise them with that extra knowledge that they
mm-hmm.
never even heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking of calling this a remix culture. You've got millions of people. They aren't good drawers. They're not good pianists. They're not good in the traditional arts, but they can play with imagery. So the amateurishness of and the participatory democratic nature of the Android meme, Web 2.0, makes it easier for people to feel creative by considering remixing as an art form. So remix seems to be the favorite way, the easiest way for people who don't have traditional Gutenberg artistic talents but want to express themselves. So in that sense, mm-hmm. the remix culture is the dominant form because that's what people who get access to Web 2.0 can do. Doesn't require the older artistic abilities.
Well, yeah, and that's perfect, actually, when you said remixing is easy because kids focused on the computer and just playing their Xbox, whatever the heck that is, and accessing remixing, they're not picking up an instrument anymore.
Right.
They're not sitting for hours over a piano. I mean, maybe they'll do guitar. Maybe they have computer programs that you play a guitar, you know, with your computer or your TV. But I'm wondering if anybody knows if the artistic creativity is hitting, hitting rock bottom, because that's what Carolyn Gorton says a little while later, page 144, about Hollywood cinema is killing creativity.
Yeah.
So that's definitely happening. And on that same page, she talks about the effect, not the content. So this is sort of the next topic.
Now, what's the paragraphs begin? What words?
Right. Erasure, looping, repetition, compression, and elongation is the paragraph on page 144.
Okay, so I'm looking at that. Erasure, I don't see that. Erasure,
looping,
no.
Repetition. You got to look 143, 145, because my Kindle may be off a page.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And I'll read it while you're looking.
Yeah, go ahead.
Erasure, looping, repetition, compression, and elongation are editing techniques of found footage. They have the effect of shifting the emphasis back onto the effect rather than the content. As a metatextural gesture, the act of sampling becomes a way of critiquing media spectacle, consumer culture, and digital technologies themselves. So they're always... it's not so much a rear-view mirror, but they're commenting on the content of the environment and making, by exposing it, they're drawing conclusions or putting a focus on it. So that's where I say the it's about the effect, not the content.
Okay, so if you've got the traditional art that Carolyn's saying is dead, creativity is dead. That's what the chemical body, you know, people with talented ears, eyes, hands, feet, all the traditional arts. You've got these kids growing up with their chip body, and they're mostly countering the TV body. So the reason remix culture took over is the TV body is the only thing that these kids or anybody can argue with their chip body. So the chemical body gets, you know, ghettoized or ignored.
Yeah.
So now, I found your quote. I want to read it so I can see what it is. Erasure, looping, repetition, compression, and editing techniques of found footage have the effect of shifting the emphasis back onto the effect rather than on the content. As a metatextual gesture, the act of sampling becomes a way of critiquing media spectacle, that's critiquing the TV body, consumer culture, and digital technologies themselves. By introducing rhythmic elements as well, often simulating a beatbox effect, sample remixes can underline particular aspects of work. Now, where is this leading to? What's the point of this paragraph? By toying with the sounds and protocols of ship communications, they explore telephony, noise, and broadcast. They also render James T. Kirk's preparations for his fight scene with the Zork as a percussive musical interlude revolving around much repetitive stick banging. Stutters and idiotically bad lines get repeated over and over as rhythmic stammers. So what's the point of this paragraph?
Maybe you should have read the first sentence.
Okay. Sampling digital art enables precisely this ability to talk back to the monolith of mass culture. That's a TV body,
mm-hmm.
and it's not necessarily a monolith. The digital chip body is the monolith, and to drive wedges in the surface of a seemingly unbroken and unbreakable structure. You see,
mm-hmm.
because people are in the chip body, and that's a newer environment, therefore it's not as noticeable, they just, like fish swimming in it, they can only see the previous body, the TV body. So they think mm-hmm. this huge, big rear-view mirror is a monster. Yet TV is scrambling to keep up with the chip body. So that's part of the cliche of remix culture. It is the only thing the chip body sees. Is the TV body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why remix culture dominates. It's the only thing that people are bothered by. The reasons for art for the chemical body aren't there anymore. The stimulus, the counter-environment that mm-hmm. books and music provided for dull chemical body lives, you're being so stimulated by the chip body that you only way you can counter it is to deal with the chip body as a reference point,
mm-hmm.
Because you're being bugged by the imagery. You know, because more and more people are seeing what mass media is telling them, the old TV body, and they live knowing that they create new spaces every day. So they can actually resent mass media, like the New York Times, because the New York Times thinks it has a right to tell us something when it's so puny compared to the chip body life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Okay, so then she gives some...
So I guess I would say there's a great reason. They talk about Kokanen and the new postmodernist guys in the 80s talked about the neocon right-wing backlash. They called it resentment, sort of a French word, like resenting.
Yeah.
So resentment. Well, what you have now, that was people being pissed off. That's the ripoff I was talking about earlier. Now you have old media environments are experiencing resentment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why the TV, the remix culture focuses on the mass culture. It's a big irritant.
Yeah. Right, right. Okay, so now she goes on to give some examples. We don't have to go into that. But I thought one interesting example brought up Moses. So I just want to read the Moses thing. It's just two paragraphs on in the middle of the second paragraph after what you just read.
Yeah.
And it starts blending more than 300 samples from science fiction, action, and biblical epic films and other sources. Pixel Pirate 2 is a virtuoso performance of Afrofuturism and anti-copyright practices and beliefs. Moses is played by Charlton Heston, is cast as the master copyright controller and archenemy of a troop of lunar video pirates who are trying to liberate creative practice from the copyright commandments. So it's like fun, it's like play. They're you know, making people laugh with their, in this case, a lot of this is like comedic,
yeah.
what they're doing to try to exposed the man.
Well, everybody is forced to be a manipian. McLuhan mm-hmm. wrote in the 60s, everybody had to adopt the artist role, be explorers like art, like an artist, to deal with the new environments in the 60s, 70s. But now, everybody within the body dynamic is forced to be cynical manipian
mm-hmm.
about imagery because it's, you know, normally if you look at what the chip body could do if there was no economics factor, everybody would be able to have access and be broadcasting. That's the purity of it or the ideal. But everybody has to interact with the older media. So the chip body utopia is being redirected for resentment. So
mm-hmm.
now this is where we come in as Ion, saying that Ion can create information that no one's ever heard of before, and it's not on the on Google or the bigger archives, to actually excavate whole new scenarios, which for most people would be preposterous, is the real anti-environment of the chip body. So she mentions that, yes, there's satires of the chip body by the chip body artists, but they're stuck within reacting to and being forced to remix the imagery all around them. And this has led you to make a manifesto of you've had enough of regular virtual medicine, and it doesn't work anymore, and hopefully people would catch this. You have a solution. But an artist in the chip body world, or in the TV world, or, you know, like Ridley Scott, who makes The Good Wife, The Good Wife, these guys who make these top TV shows, are operating in a parameter that leads to frustration. And we may be very frustrating for people. Iron may be frustrating, but actually if you get access to our situation, what we're offering, the frustration is diminished. So,
frustration is a good word. That's probably why I did the manifesto on Monday on Ginny and my show, where I just said, look, it's, at this point, I know enough to say it's medical malpractice if I do not tell people about the completement formulas, because there's been enough research to show that what we're doing works. And by withholding the information, by not making it blatant and achievable, then I would be committing malpractice. So that's what I said last Monday. And I stand by it.
Yeah, so now if Carolyn Guertin is listening to this, I don't know if she's listening to these shows we're presenting. I'm sending them to her, but she's not responding so far. This may sound like a body commercial, a subliminal dimension, but I'm actually saying that what you're doing is the real art today, that expressing yourself and being that kind of remix creativity is not art anymore. And actually we came up with a new way to be an artist or an anti-environment, which is what we're doing at Iandom. So the issue she's presenting here, digital prohibition, piracy and authorship, and new media art, I actually see us as a answer to the problem she's wrestling with. That's why I bring it up. I'm not doing it for simple sales. Aesthetically, I think we have come up with a new kind of art.
Yes, it's body art, for Pete's sakes.
Think of it.
We are creating perfect cells, and these perfect cells in our bodies are our
That's
art.
Only the chemical body. We are working with all five bodies plus. That's why we're called the hexatic. We're into the sixth body. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the five bodies have merged, according to Ion. So the antidote of RNA drops is it gives a mind poise and relaxation to deal with the chip body stomach, the indigestion that the TV body gives everybody with too much information, too much imagery, too much remixing going on all around you. So it's a 5-6 body operation we're doing here.
So six art forms, six-bodied art.
The art form is the hexatic, and our content that we're massaging is the five bodies. And so it's not just body, not just genetic.
Yes, no, I got it. I understand.
And another thing is in the TV body where you sit passively and have society in general tell you what's going on. That can be very irritating, but if you listen to Ion, Ion can tell you about what's going on in any level of sociological experience. So we actually fulfill the TV body and provide nutrition on a different, unique, and exciting interpretation of what's happening across the board in society. Mm-hmm. And I would call that the passive role of the TV body is countered by what Ion does on that level. Ion does many other things, but all the different aspects of the different bodies are covered by what we're doing.
Right. Okay, so moving on. There's a lot of examples she gives, and they're kind of fun, but people can read the book. But I jumped to page 147, and there is another video art piece called Son of... Strelka, son of God. So, I think of Ion.
Right.
Son of Strelka, son of God, starts with the story of a minor god who's born from a fruit tree and who speaks with all life that roams the earth until he discovers within himself the power to conjure up living things and beings with his words. So, I just wanted to throw that in there, that you know, the art that people are doing, it still continues to look for either the philosopher's stone or the longevity, the eternity, the God within. And as you say, Bob, we are already there.
Right. So they talk about he's evoking beings with his words. Is that what Ion says? That we create with our words?
Yep.
But just that statement is not enough to understand the what Ion offers past that. Creating your words is creating from your words can be really diminished by the Android meme because you're doing non-wordy communication, or what looks like non-words. And McLuhan was trying to show that all technologies were word-like. That was his big metaphysical insight. But if you don't have that insight, then you are struggling to express yourself beyond the word.
So. Well, look what's happening then. Just at the time when we're realizing the importance of the words, people are texting using little icons and shorthand. They're not even using words anymore.
That's, Ion has pointed that out. That's a problem for what Madame Blavatsky predicted would be the sub-race. You got the sub-race being created now.
Mm-hmm.
So we might have to expand what Ion means when he says you create with your words if you expand all your bodies as words. So typing and texting could be considered creating worlds. That's something that I haven't completely finished interrogating Ion about.
Mm-hmm.
Because much of what Ion said the first couple of years, Ion is not necessarily supporting anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Okay. Okay, moving on.
Yeah.
Page 150, it's Michel Foucault.
Yes.
Just his statement or Wharton quoting him saying, Michel Foucault, in his famous essay, What is an Author?, says that the author is never the origin or location of meaning. Meaning, instead, is fluid and changeable, always situational over time. Each work exists in conversation or in quarrel with other works. All works, he says, comprise quotations from other works, and all discourses are objects of appropriation. So this is what we said earlier, that actually everything is a throwback.
Well, what did,
everything is a remix.
I couldn't find that. Where is this quote? What page do you have?
Right.
Is it 150?
Let me. 50. Let me look it up again. Are you still looking?
Yeah, I'm looking. 121, 176. Maybe it's way on 176. May have had the wrong number.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm looking up. What is an author? 149.
149. What is an author?
Yeah,
there's no...
I've jumped back to 121 on that one.
Yeah, that's listed as one of us. So back to 121.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is an author? He says that the author is never the origin or location of meaning. Meaning instead is fluid and changeable, always situational over time. Well, that's what Finnegan's Wake demonstrated. But Joyce was saying electric media makes meaning changeable and fluid. That's the cause, whereas Foucault, is he supporting this as a value, a new value he identifies with? So it says, each work exists in conversation or in quarrel with other works. All works, he says, comprise quotations from other works. The author artist herself is a huge repository of preordained knowledge from which she draws, and every book is a rich network of influences, connections, imitations. These forces undermine any notion of authorial intent. And so in her absence, he argues, we should understand the original work to be as problematic as any notion of author. Now, why is she bringing this up? What's the context for this? She then talks about this artist, Levine. By shifting the authorial power, however, Levine both shares authorship and refuses it. So I think she's saying that the actual involvement in the chip body with chip technology creates art that's not concerned with the revolution that Foucault's talking about. Foucault's only talking about books and the chemical body and the fluidity of meaning for the chemical body, but Sherry Levine can come in and be a quadriphenic. See, with the four and five bodies, you can be a supporter and a resistor. So she shares authorship and refuses at the same time. So it looks like people, from the old point of view, are contradicting themselves. No, they're not. So I guess what she's saying is that Foucault's critique doesn't apply anymore once you have the chip body.
Right, and what was your, what did you say about the electrical digital media does what? Changes what he says about fluid and changeable?
Yeah, he's talking about writing and chemical body meaning.
Yeah.
That's, at best, you can be schizophrenic in the old chemical body world. But when you have multiple bodies like this, Sherry Levine is making art. Mm-hmm. And so she establishes the so-called breakthrough of Foucault, and then she points out the obsolescence of it by Sherry Levine, that she's not worried about being an author. She can be an author and also refuse to be an author. She can cancel the literary concerns of Foucault's because she has more than one body.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Carolyn Guertin is pointing out the multi-bodied world, but she doesn't have it down dogmatically like I do and apply it. She's just intuiting or noticing.
Implies, yes, she
implies. Implies a lot of the quadriphenia that's going on, but she doesn't put it into order. So let's see. She says, Duchamp's original ready-made has been lost, and all the extant copies of his 1917 work that are in galleries and museums are replicas, which he produced in the 1960s. Levine's copy of an absent original, therefore, functions very much like her version of Weston Hermes after a lost Praxiteles. Duchamp likely would have been amused by the clash of highbrow and low cultures that meet in her bronze urinal. So she's mixing the bodies and the different art traditions and the pop culture and the highbrow culture way more extremely than Duchamp or Foucault imagined. That's what she's trying to show.
Right, and Guertin comments again about, it goes in onto the next page, I think. The images she appropriates are invariably images of the other, women, nature, children, the poor, the insane. Levine's disrespect for paternal authority suggests that her activity is less one of appropriation. She expropriates the appropriators. So she's, Levine is using, using social commentary or her devices to create a social commentary.
She can go further than any of the aesthetic rules that the chemical body artists had set up. Even the dadaists and the manipian artists of the 60s and 70s, she can go further because she's working with four bodies, four repositories, four archives.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes, as you read the descriptions of different art forms that Levine and these new artists make, you have to really pay close attention to figure out what the hell they're describing because it's very complex and a lot of meta canceling going on.
Yeah, they really meta themselves out there. Then one of the next paragraphs talks about Levine's genealogy of appropriation does not stop with her photographs. Her work, in turn, has been appropriated by artist Michael Mandelberg, who digitized her copies of copies, works that were made available by MoMA for this project. He could have paid $100 to $300 per image to make his project legal, but on behalf of Levine or on behalf of art in general, he chose not to. He now offers his copies of her copies as printable objects with certificates of authenticity. So, yeah, it's very meta. And you know, I'm sure they have a few drinks and they don't even know where they are.
So here's where... And it's appropriate, Finney's Wake, a large part of it is based in a pub and everybody's drinking. But the what's the failure of Guertin and any other writer today is they don't know how to show the role of Finnegan's Wake in predicting this, anticipating it. They don't know how to read Finnegan's Wake. And then you would have a connection with the past or with tradition that some artists like to celebrate. You can't do it unless you know about Finnegan's Wake. And Finnegan's Wake, as you will see when I play some of my information from my recent talks with Ion the past week or so, you'll see it here, incredible mishmash of realities and what's going on in the no time situation we're in that looks like a page of Finnegan's Wake. And so I'm very happy that I spent many years looking and understanding Finnegan's Wake, getting a handle on it, because it's really become appropriate to understand what's happening with the five body world, the android meme, and also to understand what Ion is pointing out. So that's why I make Finnegan's Wake an important text.
Right. Yeah, it would give them kind of foundation structure of, you know, a touch point if they did talk about Finnegan's Wake. But all of them think they're creating something new, they want to feel that they're creating something new.
Well, the newness that Guertin is saying, that new art or the actual creative process has to be remixed. It can't be authentic and original. But she says it's not even object-oriented. Your art is how you get reactions in other chip bodies, in other TV bodies and chemical bodies to what you're doing. You're creating a forum, an audience, and then you have to be able to handle the interplay with your audience. All of this is in Finney's Wake, too. But they are not trying to be creative. They are trying to actually, like your average teenager, paranoid, panicking, is trying to text and remain in touch with somebody out there in the chip body so they can verify that there's more than themselves. So even these artists that she's inventorying are so involved in commenting on each other that they're trying to basically do the same thing and confirm that there is communication.
Yes.
Trying to establish communication, and there isn't anymore. That's where Ion comes in as an anti-environment to the non-communicating world.
Right. Okay, well, let's. There's a couple of Guy Debord quotes, and it looks like they're back on page 151. Let's see what he's trying to communicate. Guy Debord says in his prescription for methods of
Détournement.
Détournement.
Yeah.
One is not limited to correcting a work or to integrating diverse fragments of out-of-date works into a new one. One can also alter the meaning of those fragments in any appropriate way, leaving the imbeciles to their slavish preservation of citations. Yes, I said this last week.
Yeah, and we did that quote.
We did. I remember the slavish preservation. Then did I say this one, the mutual interference of two worlds of feeling or the bringing together of two independent expressions supersedes the original elements and produces a synthetic organization of greater efficacy? Anything can be used, so we know that. But I give Umberto Eco's quote?
I don't think so, no.
So Umberto Eco, she's saying a seismological term coined by Umberto Eco, quote, aberrant decoding, quote, refers to situations in which the receiver of a message fails, bracket intentionally or not, bracket, to interpret the message according to the set rules governing signification, bracket, codes used by the sender of the message, end of quote.
Let me read that. So Umberto makes up this phrase, aberrant decoding, and it refers to situations in which the receiver of a message fails, intentionally or not, to interpret the message according to the set rules governing signification or codes used by the sender of the message. It's precisely in such deliberate misreadings that the mashup revels as a creative practice. See, they're not trying to match.
There you go.
The old literary thing of matching with any kind of aesthetic standard. So the idea is to make producer mania.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, they still try to hoik up literate values or standards, like the Guggenheim says, well, we're going to improve this kind of crazy chaos and retrieve matchable standards. But it's not going to work. And the artists that Guerlain admires are the ones who don't fall for that and just become, increasingly keep their non-communication communicating going on.
Right. Yeah, but it's what's interesting is everybody does this match. Everybody does matching because anytime you say anything, people say, "Oh, that I've heard of that. That's so and so." Or you know, you talk about something. Ayn says, "Oh, so and so said that." People are always trying to match.
Yep. That's the literate mind. Now, Ayn is somebody. Ayn is something communicating to the public that always is disrupting the matching tendency.
Yes, 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 yes. Good point.
Yeah, Ayn is not encouraging matching.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Okay, so the next things that I clipped are about mashups and. There's a lot of gay mashups, Brokeback of the Ring, Brokeback Batman, and Broke Trek. So they would, make a video of Lord of the Rings, but make it a Brokeback theme. So we don't have to go over any of that.
Well, it's just that theme is about, there's so many videos have been done commenting on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember the Evergreen saying that the reason there were big blockbusters like Harry Potter books is that people in the 80s and 90s saw the anarchy of fragmentation of consciousness, so they looked for something to centralize consciousness, or at least a mood of it, on a sign. And so Harry Potter became a huge success because the regular human was looking for something to match with or to centralize an image for their kids, I guess. So this is repeated in the chip body where people are satirizing a big success. So if some big movie makes it big, it's only there to enhance the chaos of communication and people making and trying to make as much as possible a new satire on the Brokeback themes. So it's the same as the White House. The White House is there to be satirized and provide content for all the other older media dynamics. And that's the way it's been for a couple of decades now. And it's run its course. And so you could say that Donald Trump is people starting to express, we're not worried about the decentralization or the centralization anymore, that endless feeding on each other, the critique of the White House and then the White House bouncing back, and that's called gridlock, Washington gridlock. That is the world of the Android meme that Carolyn Guertin is showing modern digital art is reacting to, and is part of the Android meme. I'm saying that's run its course, and now there's a whole new sensibility. So the themes she's talking about are not relevant to 2016. They were relevant for the last 20 years, and the role of the digital anarchist or the digital maker up against the centralizing tendency of the TV body, that's been fought and battled, and you can't say anybody won or lost. It's just not containing people's interest anymore.
Well, what do you think of this type of video? She calls it post-cinema, another kind of post-cinema.
What page are you on?
Oh, sorry. Oops.
And while you look at that, what is good about... you see, there's been this revolutionary digital art that people haven't had access to. In general, in the suburbs, wherever they live, they don't know about the artist that Guertin is talking about. What I like about Guertin's book, and it was good that you read it, you didn't have time to know all this stuff. You're learning about all this creativity that was going on the last 15, 20 years, which is interesting to know about, even though it's past, it's done its day, but it's a big area of experience that people are missing. They should know some of the stuff that's happening. What happened in the art world? What happened in the creativity world? Mm. Well, the issues they were up against, like the fact there was no more creativity possible. That's one of the reasons why this book is useful.
Yeah.
It'll fill you in a whole realm of chip body experience that you as a citizen should be aware of.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so it's page 151.
Okay.
Let me just make sure here.
Oh, that's Umberto Eco. It has to be...
Page 166.
Okay.
166. Top left. Another kind of post-cinema is self-surveillance. or inverse surveillance or surveillance after a traumatic 6 months of interrogation and investigation by federal authorities followed a case of mistaken identity for Bangladeshi American artist Hassan
Ilahi.
He preempted further investigation and identity confusion by documenting all aspects of his life, wired with a GPS unit and photographing himself, his food, his surroundings on a regard basis. It should be regular, I guess. The FBI or anyone else can track him live in real time at any time. The pictures at his site number in the thousands as he uploads more than 100 photos a day.
Yes, you wanted to...
No, the question, we've lost the question. The question was, is that a new type of video, or is that just a continuation of what you were saying about these videos? They're passé, you know, this is no longer an artwork. This is just repeating the Android meme.
Well, this guy is making fun of being surveilled.
Yeah.
And he's not worried about being surveilled. So his chemical body and gives a great refusal to the Orwellian projection of a fear that we're being monitored. In the gap between no complete Orwellian takeover can happen and no complete anarchy can happen, in the gap, you have this kind of response. He's free to do this. Now, was he got surveilled after traumatic 6 months of interrogation investigated by federal authorities. He turned the fact that he was mistaken for someone else. He preempted further investigation by extremely documenting himself on behalf of the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a clever response, but it's telling you that there's nothing to be afraid of if you're tracked and surveilled.
Mm-hmm.
What there's to be afraid of is the Android meme bringing in punishment, because punishment has to be dispensed, and you get caught in the pathway of that, because he was subject to the punishment, and it shouldn't have applied to him.
Mm-hmm.
So is his art form is incomplete against an incomplete surveillance? None of these things can lead to a McLuhan used to say, James Joyce, living as if every moment you're next and everything is leading up to a horrible moment. This guy had a horrible moment, but he survived it, and then he was able to have the freedom of expression to satirize it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Good point.
It's like the everything's being canceled here. Mm-hmm. Every angle.
Right. Here's a neat sentence, and, you know, we have a few more minutes here. I'll start wrapping up. Here's what she says.
If we, what page?
Who knows? If we faced up to the insane amounts of wasted time involved with sample hunting, we'd never be able to go through with it. So she's putting the whole thing down. Let me just find.
Is that the way it's? I don't get that. What is she saying?
She's saying that so much time is spent on this sample hunting that it doesn't make any sense.
So people are looking for stuff to do their remix creation.
Page 168, correct, yeah.
Yeah, it's called archiving as an aesthetic form. No, where is it on 168?
168. It's at the bottom of 167 going into 168.
Okay, what computers have turned out to be best at is searching. What they are worst at is archiving. Obsolescence is built in and inevitable. Peter Lunefeld talks about the aesthetics of the unfinished in digital spaces. As process comes to the fore, there's the process, not the object.
Mm-hmm.
Then she quotes a famous critic, you know, 100 years ago, Paul Valéry,
mm-hmm.
where he said, all work is beta. If that is the Valéry, let me see, maybe that's a new Valéry, because who would use the word beta 100 years ago? that's my own knowledge. Paul Valery, page 51. So, okay, this just maybe a new artist. Forget what I said about the old Paul Valery. All work is beta. For Valery, a poem is never finished, only abandoned.
Yeah, and for that, I wrote in, remember my Taoist Chinese medicine doctor, double priest in New York?
Yeah.
I wanted to get him to do a book on Chinese diet therapy with me, and he'd never commit to something that I wrote or put down because he said, you can't finish anything. His Taoist philosophy would not let him write a book because it meant that he was cementing his thoughts, and he thought nothing was concrete like that. So anyway, that's what it made me think of.
Yeah, well, he had attacked being Asian. He wasn't aware of the dynamics that the book was not a finishing operation anymore. You could write books. Nobody was going to make a big deal out of it to have a concluding effect. Books weren't what they used to be. So I looked up Paul Valery. It is the guy from 100 years ago. So she says, the gap, the pause, the space of critical thought for poet Paul Valery also existed in the spaces of poetic language. Valery defined the poem as, quote, a prolonged hesitation between sound and meaning. So they're talking about the gap, and then I don't know why Valery, all work is beta. I wonder what beta means back then. So anyways, for Valery, a poem is never finished, never only abandoned. Former products are increasingly becoming mere content, or more exactly, data, in this new process of assembly, play, and performance. Now, it's interesting that ION, we've got so much out there in the archives of ION, that some of this criticism could be layered at our own archives. But what's fantastic is ION has a memory of everything he ever did, or they have a memory, and so he can retrieve it through speech rapidly about yourself rather than you searching for samples and remembering samples that you used 15 years ago or 10 years ago and have to go back and find them. ION has got that anti-environment to what she's complaining about here. The process is the experience, not just of creating digital media, but of always already remaking digital media. The protocol of the search becomes not a part of the work, but the process of the work itself. Conceptual art used computer protocol, still at its beginnings. And in brackets, the products in question would not truly make their public appearance until the following decade. Now, I don't think people can follow what we're saying. Too clearly, but the point is to give to show the sculpting of an information overload environment that many digital artists are dealing with, and we're saying that the IONDOM is including that information overload, but provides a means of search and filtering that the regular digital environment is too slow for. I don't see, where is your point you were making? I can't find what she said about what's the point. Where's that? You're saying, what's the point of doing this? Was it the wasting time quote? Can't find that.
Let me see. Yeah, insane amounts of wasted time, just below, a paragraph below. The randomness of sampling.
Well, that's not her.
I know, it's quoting Valery.
No, this is the Australian remix duo, Dan and Dominic, they say, quote, the randomness of sampling means that you can't help but develop a kind of obsessive gambling mentality. It's addictive. Sometimes you might go through 10 videos in a night without finding anything of use, and another time you might land a few gold samples in a period of minutes. If we faced up to the insane amounts of wasted time involved with sample hunting, we'd never be able to go through with it. So instead, we endorse the delusion that jackpot is always just about to drop. So then Guertin comments on that. The process is experience. So I think she's critiquing the Australian artists. They're called Soda Jerk. They're a remix duo made up of Dan and Dominique Angeloro. they are trying to find something.
Yes.
They
yes.
get an object, and they still are working towards that gold. And Guertin's a little more indifferent to that. The process is experience, not just of creating digital media, but of always already remaking digital media. The protocol of the search becomes not a part of the work, but the process of the work itself. I thought there that there's something about Iandom that counters that. You're always going to be frustrated in this world that she's analyzing, because she's looking for the big corporations infringing remix creativity while documenting endless creativity anyways.
Well, here's what you're looking for.
Okay.
You know, like we've talked about, well, I've talked about being able to douse online. My research is instantaneous because I always find what I want, and that's the same as Roxana.
Yes,
because she's always talking about she says it's Ion who's helping her, or it's just her dowsing ability. She always finds exactly what she wants as quickly as she wants.
Yeah, I was going to say that about 2 minutes ago. That's the next idea.
Yeah,
that's where the Iondom Ion helps your sampling searching,
right.
You know, most of the good stuff that Roxana finds, she says she didn't know about and she didn't find.
Mm-hmm.
It just gets dropped in her lap.
Right.
So actually, we could make the digital artist, if they tune into Ion somehow, maybe it's just talking to Ion, he notices you, and then he'll help you, they could get over this frustration.
Yeah, because I think, that's partly what I was looking at, the insane amounts of wasted time. It's like, no, you don't have to. If you're on target, you're on target.
If you have your non-physical worker with you.
Exactly.
Well, that's an interesting conclusion.
I think that's a good... Yeah, and I'm pretty much done. Okay.